Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Conflicted by Laurie Matthews, narrated by Wyeth Watts and Sophia Willingham. Prologue. The deck of the boat rolled beneath their feet as they struggled with the weight of their cargo. It was heavy, and more importantly, hard to get a good hold on in the pouring rain. The storm had come out of nowhere, and the two men were unprepared.
"Le arragas los pies!"
yelled Diego, the taller of the two men.
"¿Qué?"
Luis asked. He cupped his ear. The wind gusted and the boat rolled again. Luis grabbed for the side. Diego tried again in Spanish, but Luis shook his head. Diego swore. He motioned wildly, indicating the legs of the dead guy. Luis nodded. He reached down to the deck and grabbed the sneaker-clad feet of the dead man while Diego tried to spread the body bag open enough for Luis to guide the feet in. But the wind pulled it out of Diego's hand.
Mierda!
They'd been trying to get the body in the bag for the last 10 minutes, but with the wind, the waves, and Luis puking over the side, it was hopeless. Diego shook his head.
Fuck the bag! Wrap the chains around the body and toss it!
Luis immediately dropped the feet. He grabbed onto the side of the boat and vomited again. Diego shook his head and swore again.
It was fucking amateur hour with this kid.
If he wasn't the boss's cousin, Diego would have just pushed the kid overboard to put him out of his misery. Diego picked up the top half of the body, and Luis got to place the chain underneath. Then they worked together to get it wrapped around the dead man a couple of times. Diego stood up.
Okay, Luis, on the count of three, we swing him over the side. Just make sure you secure the chain.
He handed Luis a massive padlock.
I gotta check the anchor. It feels like we're moving too much.
Luis took the lock. Diego stumbled toward the bow of the speedboat. Luis bent down and tried to slide the large hasp through the chain. The boat bobbed in the waves, throwing him off balance. He fell and hit his face on the side of the boat. Cursing, he struggled up onto his hands and knees and tried again. He managed to get the lock through the first chain and was working on the second when Diego came back. Diego tapped him on the shoulder.
The anchor is gone. We gotta go.
Luis snapped the lock shut and then grabbed the dead man's feet. Diego picked up the top part of the body. The two men swung the dead man a few times to build up momentum.
One, two.
The boat unexpectedly pitched sideways, and a large wave crashed over the side, driving both Diego and Luis backward. The bow swung up and then crashed down again, rattling their bones. The dead guy had been balanced on the side, but when the boat dropped into the trough, he was gone.
Good riddance,
Luis muttered. He then sat down on the deck and started praying. Diego went to the controls and threw the boat into gear. The powerful engines roared above the sound of the wind and the waves, and the boat jumped forward, heading toward Miami. This had been one of the worst jobs ever. He hated working with Luis. He'd had a bad feeling about the whole thing the moment his boss mentioned it, but it wasn't like he could say no. He was just glad it was over. He couldn't wait to get on dry land and leave all this shit behind him.
Chapter 1. Hey, babe, bring me a beer, yelled Samuel Soto from in front of the TV. Andrea Torres gritted her teeth. She'd been working undercover for what seemed like forever, and this asshole Soto would just not budge. Usually, she was good at getting men to tell her things, but Soto was very closed-mouthed, and it was getting harder and harder to find reasons she couldn't sleep with him. There was no way in hell she was having sex with that animal. No fucking way at all. Case or no case. Andy's long, dark, curly hair was hanging loose over her shoulders. Her white tank top was a tad too small, so it scooped low over her chest, showing off more cleavage than she was comfortable with, and she'd covered herself as much as possible with a red plaid shirt that was open but tight at the waist. She also wore an old pair of jeans that were a fraction too tight. She longed for a pair of sweats and a big old t-shirt. She opened the fridge and pulled out a beer. Plastering a fake smile on her face, she walked into the other room. "Here," she said in a sweet voice. Soto patted the sofa next to him.
"Ven siéntate a mi lado. Come sit by my side. The match is boring."
His friend, Tommy Rosario, snorted.
"It's only boring because your team is losing." "You watch your mouth, Tommy. It ain't over yet," Soto growled.
He had stopped paying any attention to Andy, so she drifted back into the kitchen. It was better if she was out of sight. He paid less attention to her that way. She leaned against the counter and then thought the better of it. The house was disgusting, and who knew what was living under all the pizza boxes and leftover takeout cartons.
"So, Soto, when's it coming?"
Andy cocked her head. Please let this be it. She wanted this job to be over so badly it hurt. She hated being in Miami, and worse, she hated that she was doing this job under her real name. The neighborhood where she grew up already thought she was trash, just like her sister Carmen. They all said it was such a waste that Carmen had died of a drug overdose. But Andy knew it was more than a waste. It was murder, and only one man was responsible for that. Now, hanging out with Soto was just confirmation of everything people thought about her for years. Guilt by association. Andy cupped a hand over her mouth and tuned into the conversation in the next room.
"I told you, man. I'll tell you when it's time. Stop bugging me about it." "It's just that I'm broke, man, and I need to make some cash," Tommy whined.
Soto snorted.
"Stop shooting up your money and you won't be broke." "I know, man, but you know how it is."
Soto didn't respond. The announcer had started yelling. Someone was going in to score. They were watching some soccer game.
"Football, chica. How many times do I gotta tell you that?"
Soto was all into soccer. Andy was pretty sure he bet on it with his bookie. Soto's cell phone went off. Text message. She recognized the sound. Soto must have called someone because he was talking suddenly.
"Yeah. When?"
Silence.
"Okay."
Then he must have clicked off the call because he said,
"That was the call. The deal is going down tomorrow, but we gotta do it on the water, like I said. Your boy got that boat we can use?" "He does, he does. We can grab it in the morning." "Nah, man, the deal don't be going down till it's dark. Midnight. I got the coordinates. We'll pick up the boat around 8. It'll take some time to get out there."
Andy did a mental dance of joy. She just had to make it out of here tonight, and then they'll grab him tomorrow, and it will be over. They could follow the boat out, and then grab Soto when he was making the exchange. She would finally be done with this damn assignment, and she could get out of Miami. Just one more day. She took a deep breath. "I'm gonna go," she said as she came around the corner.
"No, babe. You stay."
She smiled at Soto. "No, I gotta go see my aunt. I'll be back. Maybe I'll bring you some of her food. You know how much you like her cooking." Soto's eyes narrowed.
"I said you stay."
Just then, the announcer started yelling on the screen, and Soto's attention drifted off her. As the announcer became more excited, Andy slowly backed out of the room. She had made it around the corner and opened the back door as quietly as possible when the announcer started screaming. Soto's team scored. Andy hit the stairs at a dead run and made it over the backyard fence in record time. She was down the alley and into her beater car before Soto had a chance to notice, or so she hoped. If he came looking for her at her aunt's, it would be a problem. She doubted he would because her aunt had a fierce reputation in the neighborhood, and no one wanted to take her on. Esther Madera was not someone to be messed with. The whole neighborhood knew it. Andy was thankful in more ways than one that her aunt still spoke to her. Offering Andy protection without knowing the truth made Aunt Esther truly a saint. Someday, she would explain to her aunt that she was really an alcohol, tobacco, and firearms agent. ATF, and a damn fucking good one. But today was not that day. Auntie parked on the street in front of her aunt's place and went in the front door. "Hey, Aunt Esther," she called out as she walked through the front room and into the dining room that was separated from the kitchen by a breakfast bar. Her aunt, who was standing in front of the stove, turned to look at Andy.
"Andrea."
Her aunt looked up from making dinner, and her lips thinned. Andy didn't want to meet Esther's gaze, so she checked out the stove in front of her. Stuffed peppers, by the look of things. One of Andy's favorites.
"You were over with Soto again. He is bad news, chica."
Andy finally met her gaze. It was only one more day. One more. But the sadness written on the woman's face splintered Andy's heart. She came around the counter and went to stand by her aunt. She reached out and squeezed the woman's arm.
"Aunt Esther, there's more going on than I can say. You just have to trust me. It shouldn't be much longer now."
Her aunt's eyes narrowed as she studied her niece, but she nodded her head once. She went back to making dinner.
"You're just in time. It's one of your favorites."
Andy smiled. She really needed to call her boss and set up a meet, but the food smelled so good her stomach growled.
"Let me make a quick call and then I'll help you."
After her aunt nodded again, Andy went to her bedroom in the back corner of the little house. She made sure the windows were closed and the blinds were down. Then she pulled the bed out slightly and knelt. She removed the vent cover and pulled out a cell phone. She dialed a number she knew by heart.
"It's me," she said when the man on the other end answered. "Soto said the deal is going down tomorrow night on the water. He's getting a boat from some friend of Tommy's."
Her boss, Derek Robbins, grunted.
"Did he say where on the water the meet was?"
"No, just that they'd pick the boat up around 8 because it would take a while to get there. He has the coordinates, and the meet is set for midnight."
"Okay. I want you to come in tonight, and let's get everything organized for the bust. I'll send the guys to get you. They'll be there in about 20 minutes, in back of your aunt's place."
"Make it an hour."
There was silence on the other end of the phone, but then her boss mumbled,
"Fine,"
and then clicked off the call. Andy stared at the phone for a second, and then hit the erase button. She had enough shit to deal with without Robbins being an ass. She dumped him a few months back, and he still wasn't over it. In her mind, he'd gone from Derek to Robbins overnight. Now he was just another boss. And he made it obvious he hated that. Robbins was tall, with light brown hair and blue eyes that had seemed so sincere. He was a handsome guy, in a classic sort of way, and she'd been flattered when he'd asked her out. He'd told her how much he admired her skill, and she'd believed him. But dating her boss had been a stupid thing to do, and she'd known it almost immediately, although it had taken her a few months to end the relationship. Robbins was a manipulator, and he liked to be in control of everything, including her. He'd been angry when she'd broken it off. He sucked at letting go. It was only when she mentioned that the relationship could be construed as sexual harassment since he was in a position of power over her that he finally stopped pestering her about getting back together. He still hadn't forgiven her, though. Andy made sure the phone was clean and even went as far as dialing the number for a local cab company, as she did after every call. That way, if someone ever found the burner phone, they wouldn't find anything if they hit redial. She put the phone back into the heating vent and put the cover on. Then she moved the bed back into place. An hour and a half later, Andy was sitting at a picnic table in a secluded part of a small park well outside of her neighborhood with the rest of the team. Robbins, her boss, was sitting across from her. Agent Jay Vale sat next to her, eating her aunt's leftovers. Jay was tall and Reed thin, with thick blonde hair and hazel eyes that always struck her as a little bit sad. She'd brought enough for everyone, but only Jay and Agent Ricardo Peña had helped themselves. Peña sat next to Robbins as he tucked into the peppers. He was shorter than the other men, but he had a friendly smile and sparkling brown eyes.
Peña also had a lovely wife and two daughters that he talked about constantly. Andy had liked him immediately when they'd first met. "How's Isabella?" she asked him. His daughter, Izzy, had learning difficulties. She was on the autism spectrum, and she had physical issues due to being born prematurely. He doted on her. The whole family did. She was a lovely child. Peña sighed.
"She is good. She goes to see another doctor next week. Still doing her therapy sessions, and her walking is getting much better. So is her reading, but it's expensive. I don't know how much longer we can keep them up."
Her heart broke for Peña and his family. The medical system wasn't really set up to help children like Izzy. Peña paid out thousands upon thousands of dollars to get all manner of therapy for Izzy, yet her progress was slight. She reached out and touched his arm. "Tell Izzy I say hey." He smiled.
She liked that.
Robbins glanced at her hand on Peña's arm and then back at her face.
"So back to business. You have no idea where on the water they're going to meet?"
Robbins asked again. She shook her head. "Soto said he had the coordinates, but didn't elaborate at all."
"What do you think, boss?"
Jay asked between mouthfuls. Derek narrowed his eyes slightly.
"I think following Soto tomorrow night goes without saying, but I'd feel a lot better about it if we could get a tracker on him."
Andy shook her head. "Soto isn't stupid. He checks and rechecks everything. There's nothing he's going to take with him that we can stick a tracker on without him knowing it. We'll just have to be on our toes. How many more bodies are we going to get on this?"
"Not sure yet," Robbins said. "Once I get back and run it up the chain of command, I'll have a better idea. But there will be enough to do it right. Two boats, I think, plus some air support. It's supposed to be a big shipment, so we should get the okay for the additional manpower without a problem." "You must be happy, Andy, to be done with Soto," Peña commented.
She grinned. "You have no idea. It's getting harder and harder to keep him at arm's length."
"I don't think you're done with him just yet."
Robbins put his palms flat on the table. Andy's stomach knotted and a wave of nausea rolled through her.
"What do you mean?" "If we can't track Soto, then we have to track the next best thing."
Derek pointed at her chest.
"You."
Jay stopped chewing, and Peña let out a muffled curse. The weight of both of their gazes settled on Andy, but she didn't take her eyes off her boss.
"No. No way. I told you, he's getting more demanding. His behavior is getting more erratic. If there hadn't been some European soccer game he was watching, I wouldn't have been able to get out of there tonight. I am not risking my life for this."
She squared her shoulders.
"I'm just... no."
She'd had misgivings about this assignment from the get-go, and she'd voiced them, but Robbins had overridden her doubts. He said it would affect her career negatively if she didn't take it. It was only supposed to last a couple of weeks, but here they were 3 months in, and she was struggling to not blow her cover. She was also running out of excuses not to sleep with him. Soto was paranoid and a bit crazy. He was also deadly as hell. It had taken her weeks to gain his trust. In the beginning, he'd had a girlfriend, so he wasn't looking to make friends. But then he dumped Angelica, and things went downhill. First, Andy had used the excuse that she had woman problems. Then she said she needed to get on birth control, and she'd gone on in detail about the types and having to get a doctor's appointment. He'd just told her to hurry up. Now she'd run out of excuses, and he was horny. He hadn't wanted to let her out of his sight. Going back in was too dangerous. Robbins retorted,
"We need you on the inside. It's too easy to lose Soto on the water with no idea where he's going. We've all spent months on this, not just you. We need to see it through. It's only one more day."
Her boss's face was neutral, but she couldn't get past the feeling that he was punishing her. He wanted her to suffer because she dumped him. He wanted her to feel uneasy and be scared. There was a gleam in his eye she didn't trust.
"I don't think..." "You can manage Soto,"
Robbins dismissed her fears with a wave of his hand.
Jay, can you get the tech guys to rig up something for Andy to take with her?
Jay glanced at Andy.
Yeah, I'll call Craig.
Good. Robbins looked down at his phone, which had started buzzing.
I gotta take this.
He got up from the table and wandered toward the trees.
You don't have to do this, Andy,
Pena said, as soon as their boss was out of earshot.
It's dangerous as hell. I don't know what Robbins is thinking.
He shook his head. Andy sighed.
Jay, is he right? Will it be hard to follow Soto on the water?
Jay frowned.
Yes, he's right. We'll need air support, and I already checked. The moon will be full tomorrow night. Lots of light, so the air support will be able to see clearly, but they'll have to stay back, otherwise they will be seen. It would be much easier if we had a tracker on Soto or the boat.
She glanced at Robbins. He was still engrossed in his call.
Do you have any suggestions on how we can get a tracker on Soto or Tommy without me going back?
Jay looked helpless, and Pena swore as he dug a cigarillo out of his pack.
It's a bad fucking idea, Andy, and you know it.
You're right, Pena. It is a bad idea, but I don't have a better one, and neither do you. So I guess I'm stuck with it. Her palms started to sweat. She knew in the depths of her soul something bad was going to come from this. She said a short prayer that tomorrow night's adventure didn't get her killed.
Chapter 2. Elias cursed as he dropped his boot on his toe. He was late, and if he didn't haul ass his ride to work, Kane Maddox would start blowing the horn, which would piss off Mrs. Jimenez in the next apartment over. Then she would lie in wait for him to come home and give him another lecture. It was like living in a fucking dorm or something. He would find a new place, if this one wasn't so awesome in other ways. Elias shoved his foot into the offending boot and then laced it up. Of course, he wouldn't be late if he hadn't stayed up all night playing poker. It had been a great night. The cards fell his way. Who was he kidding? He kicked ass because he was awesome at poker. He'd started playing years ago to deal with the rage over his best friend's death. Playing poker was one of the few times he could block out all the pain. Turned out, he was damn good at it. Too good. It was always hard to get up and leave the table. He stood and did up his jeans. Then he buckled his belt and threw on his short-sleeved navy T-shirt, leaving it untucked. He grabbed his gun off the nightstand and slipped it under the T-shirt into the waistband of his jeans. He was enjoying not wearing his uniform. Rear Admiral Lower Half George Bertrand had agreed with Nick Taggart, Elias's team leader, that dressing in civilian clothes made more sense, for now, especially since their headquarters was located in an office building. He glanced at his reflection in the full-length mirror that was across from the bed on the wall. His brown wavy hair was short, the way he liked it. But there was already a pained look in his chocolate-brown eyes. His right leg was hurting again. He took a second to rub the scar from the bullet wound he'd received oh so long ago. He'd spent too long sitting at a poker table last night, and now he was paying for it. But he'd won a lot of cash, so it wasn't all bad. The blue-green of the ocean caught his eye. Didn't matter how many times he looked out his windows, the view never failed to impress. It was one of the very few things he missed since he signed on with the Coast Guard and left Miami. He grabbed his go-bag and walked across the big open space to the door. He glanced at the kitchen area in the corner. There was still a bit of coffee in the pot, but it would be cold by now. He decided to skip it. He let his gaze roam over the apartment. Was there anything else he needed? He'd been bouncing around for years, always picking up second-hand furniture and leaving it behind, only to buy again in the new place. The couch was overstuffed and in a shade of brown that reminded him of hot chocolate. It was in the middle of the room, facing the left wall where his big-screen TV hung. Matching overstuffed chairs flanked the sofa and a coffee table in front. On the other side of the room was a dining table and six chairs. It was done in a light wood. He'd gotten it cheap since it was a floor model. But he'd never eaten at it, since there was an island by the kitchen area that had black leather stools tucked under it. He preferred to eat there. The view through the huge glass windows overlooking Biscayne Bay had always held his attention anyway. He didn't mind that there were tankers going in and out in front of him. He liked to watch their movements. It was soothing, in a way. He'd rented this loft because he'd liked the open plan and the view. But the thing that had really sold it was the rooftop deck. Nothing better than being out under the stars and hearing the waves when he couldn't sleep in the middle of the night. Elias glanced at his watch and cursed. He pulled open the loft door and almost plowed over Mrs. Jimenez. She glared at him.
"He hasn't even hit the horn yet," Elias said.
"Your friend is parked directly in front of the door, so now Mr. Tanez can't get dropped off. You know he can't walk far."
Elias stared at the woman. She barely came up to the middle of his chest, so she couldn't have topped 5 feet. She was heavyset and constantly wore loose-fitting dresses with lots of flowers on them. Her dark eyes were always glaring at him, and because he towered over her, he knew she needed a trip to the hairdresser to fix her roots. He sighed. "Well, then I guess you'd better move so I can leave and Mr. Tanez can have his parking spot." Mrs. Jimenez narrowed her eyes and then mumbled something about him having bad manners. Once she shuffled to the side, Elias exited his loft. He pulled the door closed and locked it. Then he nodded to Mrs. Jimenez and jogged down the stairs, wincing each time his right leg took his weight. He hit the bottom floor a minute later and opened the main door. Mr. Tanez was just coming up to the entryway. His gait was slow, and he leaned heavily on his cane. But his bright brown eyes twinkled. His white hair was cut close to his scalp, and he wore a polo shirt with a pair of plaid shorts. His spindly legs stuck out like sticks on a snowman. Elias gritted his teeth, but couldn't seem to stop himself from apologizing to the old man. "Mr. Tanez, sorry if we blocked your spot." Mr. Tanez looked up at Elias.
"It's fine." He waved his hand. "Mrs. Jimenez, she's nosy, and you won't tell her anything."
"You tell her what she wants to know, and she'll be nicer to you."
Elias frowned.
"But it's none of her business."
"No, but it will make your life easier."
He shook his head.
"You don't want to tell her the truth? Make some shit up.
But tell her something, so she'll stop talking about you to the rest of us."
Elias grinned. The old man had a point. "I'll give it some thought."
"Just don't make it too wild. That will set her off, too,"
Mr. Tanez said. "Thanks for the advice." Elias glanced up and saw Kane pointing at his watch. He nodded. "Have a good one, Mr. Tanez."
"You too, young man,"
Mr. Tanez mumbled as he made his way in the door. Elias climbed into Kane's truck.
"Sorry."
Kane pulled away from the curb.
"Why do you live with a pile of old people?"
Elias laughed. "The view and the rooftop deck are worth it."
"How did you even get into that building in the first place? I thought it was seniors only."
"The owners are having some security issues. There have been some attacks on the elderly in the neighborhood. They let me have the apartment with the idea that I would help them fix their security and generally try to keep the building safe."
Kane glanced over. "They hired you for that? Obviously, they didn't do their research."
"Thanks," Elias grunted. "I'll remember that." 20 minutes later, Kane pulled into the parking lot at their new office. Elias shook his head slightly. None of the team liked being in an office building. It was just weird. "At least there's parking."
"If only you had a car."
"Funny," Elias said as he opened the door. "I'll get coffee." He got out and slammed the door and then headed to the food truck parked at the curb, shouting a greeting at the owner.
"Morning, Carlos."
"Hey, man, how's it going?"
He nodded his head.
"Going well."
Carlos already started lining up the little cups for Cuban coffee.
"Your usual?"
"Yeah."
Café Cubano was something Elias had missed. The Cuban espresso beans had a particular taste, and when sugar was added, well, it was better than any other caffeine drink going. He always brought 8 little cups up to the office with him each morning. The guys had adjusted to it and now had come to expect it. They were even starting to order it on their own. He scanned the street. An SUV was parked down the block with 2 men in it. "The SUV down the block," Elias started.
"The one with the 2 men in it?" Carlos asked without looking up from making the coffee.
"Yeah. They've been here long?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?